about what to do with me. And so I was not invited to the White House. And so, no, I've not had contact with the White House. And I don't know whether anybody at the White House wants to talk with me or whether or not I'm being blocked from going to the White House. They know my history. They know that I fought for Haiti. They know that I was supportive of President Aristide. They know that I helped to rescue him, along with you and others, when we went to the Central African Republic to get him. They know all of this. They know my history, and nobody seems to be talking to me.
Well, Congressmember Waters, want to thank you for being with us. Of course, we're going to continue to cover this extensively. Congressmember Waters is talking about the 2004 trip. I covered her flying in a small plane with Randall Robinson of TransAfrica and a Jamaican parliamentarian. We flew to the Central African Republic, where President Aristide was flown in a military plane in a coup against Aristide in Haiti by the U.S. military. They brought him back to the Western Hemisphere. You can go to democracynow.org to see the story of that journey and my interview with President Aristide at the time. California Democratic Congresswoman Maxine Waters, thank you so much for being with us. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe, wear a mask, protect the whole community.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a finance coordinator. Our finance coordinator is responsible for accounting for and providing reports on KBOO's finances, ensuring that the financial systems function effectively, efficiently, and in a timely manner, and supporting human resource procedures and policies. For a complete job description and instructions on how to apply, visit kboo.fm/employment. Applications are due by October 4th. KBOO is an affirmative action and equal opportunity employer.
You're tuned in to KBOO Portland. Our fall membership drive is happening right now. During this drive, we're featuring content that examines democracy. Join us as programmers explore the sounds of democracy. You can help us in our continuous efforts to feature underserved voices by becoming a member of KBOO Community Radio today. We're a non-commercial, independent community radio station supported by our members. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. You can also mail a check to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this fall fun drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, a grand jury won't charge the police officer who shot and killed Robert Delgado. Portland City Council will vote next week on renewing contracts with a controversial cleaning and security organization. And former Trump officials are subpoenaed in this January 6th investigation. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 24th, 2021. KBOO is currently in our fall fun drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Sam Bowman. A grand jury says it did not find enough evidence to charge the Portland police officer who shot and killed Robert Delgado in Lentz Park in April. Zachary DeLong shot and killed Delgado while he was in mental distress and holding a fake gun. Officers said they didn't know the gun was fake and shot Delgado from 90 feet away. He was 46 years old and died at the scene. Delgado's family requested a special prosecutor for his case, and Multnomah County District Attorney Mike Schmidt appointed two attorneys general from the State Department of Justice to handle the case. Delgado's family shared a statement after learning the results of the grand jury's decision. They wrote, quote, "While we don't know exactly what happened here, we do know the mental health system is broken and needs to be fixed. We do know an unarmed man in crisis was shot and killed in a Portland park. We know that it's not the first time, and until we fix this system, it won't be the last time," end quote. The district attorney's office has said they will file a motion to release the grand jury transcripts to the public. Multnomah County leaders announced how they are planning to tackle ongoing gun and community violence. Elected and community officials cited the effects of COVID-19 for disrupting normal routines and behavioral health in people. Last Tuesday, the Portland Police Bureau reported 7 shootings just that day, while Multnomah County deputies have already confiscated 719 firearms for 2021, more than double the total in 2020. County Chair Deborah Kafuri says that Multnomah County is responding to these rises in violence by, quote, moving forward urgently, holistically, and in close coordination, unquote. Multnomah County District Attorney Mike Schmidt announced yesterday that he and Chair Kafuri are working to secure $1 million in funding to bring on 2 new investigators and 4 new attorneys to add capacity to homicide investigations and prosecutions. Schmidt said that he is trying to avoid past pitfalls of a, quote, tough-on-crime approach, which perpetuates cycles of poverty and oppression. He supports a more collaborative, modernized, and evidence-based approach to reducing violence in Portland. Sheriff Mike Reese is pushing for a stronger alliance between a number of groups, the Gresham Police, the Department of Community Justice, the City of Portland's Office of Violence Prevention, Healing Hurt People, the DA's office, and the FBI. County officials are saying this collaboration improves information sharing and better defines the roles of each organization. Community organization leaders also weighed in on addressing gun violence yesterday, saying increasing capacity in community groups can make a difference. Joel McFerrin II is the executive director of Portland Opportunities Industrialization Center, a North Portland organization targeting at-risk youth and their families. McFerrin has expanded the program to include the initiative Healing Hurt People, which sends outreach workers to hospitals right after a shooting, informs the community, and diminishes retaliatory violence. The Public Safety Village, a more recent offshoot of his organization, is helping fill gaps in violence by providing intervention services and cognitive behavioral therapy, conflict resolution, and grief loss support groups. Many officials noted that violence is often concentrated in communities with higher rates of poverty, lower incomes, higher health disparities, and fewer economic opportunities. McFerrin said, quote, those closest to the problem are closest to the solution. Addressing the violence will take input and action from the community and those with lived experience, end quote. Portland City Commissioners will wait a week to decide whether the Downtown and Old Town Enhanced Service District's Clean and Safe contract should be renewed for 5 years and $25 million. Clean and Safe provides extra security and trash removal services to Downtown and Old Town. Thursday's City Council meeting was the final opportunity for public testimony to be heard regarding the contract, though written testimony may still be submitted through next week. Public testimony was overwhelmingly opposed to renewing the contract. A May 2020 audit by the city found that the government had little or no oversight over Clean and Safe. After next week's vote, the city will also audit other
your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this fall fun drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, a grand jury won't charge the police officer who shot and killed Robert Delgado. Portland City Council will vote next week on renewing contracts with a controversial cleaning and security organization, and former Trump officials are subpoenaed in this January 6th investigation.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this fall fun drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, a grand jury won't charge the police officer who shot and killed Robert Delgado. Portland City Council will vote next week on renewing contracts with a controversial cleaning and security organization, and former Trump officials are subpoenaed in this January 6th investigation. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 24th, 2021. KBOO is currently in our fall fund drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Sam Bowman. A grand jury says it did not find enough evidence to charge the Portland police officer who shot and killed Robert Delgado in Lentz Park in April. Zachary DeLong shot and killed Delgado while he was in mental distress and holding a fake gun. Officers said they didn't know the gun was fake and shot Delgado from 90 feet away. He was 46 years old and died at the scene. Delgado's family requested a special prosecutor for his case, and Multnomah County District Attorney Mike Schmidt appointed two attorneys general from the State Department of Justice to handle the case. Delgado's family shared a statement after learning the results of the grand jury's decision. They wrote, quote, "While we don't know exactly what happened here, we do know the mental health system is broken and needs to be fixed. We do know an unarmed man in crisis was shot and killed in a Portland park. We know that it's not the first time, and until we fix this system, it won't be the last time," end quote. The district attorney's office has said they will file a motion to release the grand jury transcripts to the public. Multnomah County leaders announced how they are planning to tackle ongoing gun and community violence. Elected and community officials cited the effects of COVID-19 for disrupting normal routines and behavioral health in people. Last Tuesday, the Portland Police Bureau reported 7 shootings just that day, while Multnomah County deputies have already confiscated 719 firearms for 2021, more than double the total in 2020. County Chair Deborah Kafuri says that Multnomah County is responding to these rises in violence by, quote, "moving forward urgently, holistically, and in close coordination," unquote. Multnomah County District Attorney Mike Schmidt announced yesterday that he and Chair Kafuri are working to secure $1 million in funding to bring on 2 new investigators and 4 new attorneys to add capacity to homicide investigations and prosecutions. Schmidt said that he is trying to avoid past pitfalls of a, quote, tough-on-crime approach, which perpetuates cycles of poverty and oppression. He supports a more collaborative, modernized, and evidence-based approach to reducing violence in Portland. Sheriff Mike Reese is pushing for a stronger alliance between a number of groups, the Gresham Police, the Department of Community Justice, the City of Portland's Office of Violence Prevention, Healing Hurt People, the DA's office, and the FBI. County officials are saying this collaboration improves information sharing and better defines the roles of each organization. Community organization leaders also weighed in on addressing gun violence yesterday, saying increasing capacity in community groups can make a difference. Joel McFerrin II is the executive director of Portland Opportunities Industrialization Center, a North Portland organization targeting at-risk youth and their families. McFerrin has expanded the program to include the initiative Healing Hurt People, which sends outreach workers to hospitals right after a shooting, informs the community, and diminishes retaliatory violence. The Public Safety Village, a more recent offshoot of his organization, is helping fill gaps in violence by providing intervention services and cognitive behavioral therapy, conflict resolution, and grief loss support groups. Many officials noted that violence is often concentrated in communities with higher rates of poverty, lower incomes, higher health disparities, and fewer economic opportunities. McFerrin said, quote, "Those closest to the problem are closest to the solution. Addressing the violence will take input and action from the community and those with lived experience," end quote. Portland City Commissioners will wait a week to decide whether the Downtown and Old Town Enhanced Service District's Clean and Safe contract should be renewed for 5 years and $25 million. Clean and Safe provides extra security and trash removal services to Downtown and Old Town. Thursday's city council meeting was the final opportunity for public testimony to be heard regarding the contract, though written testimony may still be submitted through next week. Public testimony was overwhelmingly opposed to renewing the contract. A May 2020 audit by the city found that the government had little or no oversight over Clean and Safe. After next week's vote, the city will also audit other enhanced service districts serviced by Clean and Safe, including the Lloyd and Central East Side districts and the organizations that manage them. If the audit finds that changes are needed, the contract can be renegotiated. Officials say the final review could take up to 2 years to complete. Currently, more than 400 downtown businesses and residents fund the Clean and Safe program. The program has received criticism from houseless individuals, residents, advocates, and business owners. Critics say that the Portland Business Alliance, which operates the property owner-funded programs, has misused funds. Many have also cited Clean and Safe security guards abusing their authority and harassing houseless people. Critics contend that the guards are often mistaken for police officers, blurring their line of authority, and that individuals are often tasked with responding to a houseless person experiencing mental health crisis with no training on how to do so. Amendments to the 5-year, $25 million contract could include outfitting security officers in uniforms that distinguish them from police, allowing a quarter of them to carry guns while adding 3 trained mental health outreach workers. Further requirements may enable a system created to allow people to submit complaints about Clean and Safe, as well as guards providing business cards to individuals with details about how to report complaints for each member they interact with. Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler weighed in on the decision for next week's vote, saying, quote, "This is not the end of the conversation. This is a step forward. We are committing ourselves to a full evaluation of enhanced service districts in Portland," end quote. Critics of the program argue that during Thursday's meeting, changes announced were not enough and that recommendations didn't have clear accountability measures to ensure positive change. Commissioner Joanne Hardesty spoke of disappointment that many stakeholders' concerns were not addressed, saying, quote, "There are some changes, yes, but not the big changes that the community has been demanding," end quote. Hardesty also noted that her 2020 project Portland Street Response is a more holistic response to many of the concerns at stake. Portland Community College will not require vaccinations in its winter term. The board voted not to enact a vaccination mandate, counter to what all 7 of Oregon's public universities are requiring of students. The board delayed their vote until Tuesday to collect data and consider a racial equity component to a vaccine mandate. They sent a survey of the over 50,000 students at PCC, but only about 9% responded, many with reluctance about the mandate. PCC is offering a mostly remote and online fall term, and the board will decide whether to continue that into the winter term on October 15th. On Thursday, Oregon reported 1,808 new cases of coronavirus and 12 deaths. The known COVID death toll in the state is now 3,661. Portland Public Schools will purchase additional tents so students can eat their lunch outside. KBOO's Josh Salem has this story.
3 weeks ago, while conditions were very dry, Portland Public Schools did not always supply tents in which students could eat lunch. Even now, only 30 of 100 districts have outdoor coverings. The general plan for rainy days in many schools was to eat indoors during a brief 15-minute time slot while using fans and air filters, wearing masks as much as possible, and keeping windows open. Now, Portland Public Schools is trying to accommodate institutions that requested outdoor shelters, starting with elementary and middle schools first. According to the district, the goal is to impede the spread of COVID-19 ahead of the rainy season. Every district school did receive some money to create outdoor accommodations, but logistical challenges exist, including preventing the tents from being stolen. District officials said PPS will accelerate efforts to acquire tents as soon as each school has designed a plan. However, they cannot confirm an exact timeline for schools to receive them. One parent said the tent situation should have been figured out at the start of the pandemic. Maya Van Geldern has a kindergartner and fourth grade student in Northeast. She stated, quote, "Eating is so important, especially for so many children who are only getting meals at school. That time to actually eat their lunch needs to be focused and not disrupted and not miserable," end quote. In the coming weeks, school officials expect to announce indoor winter lunch protocols. For now, the district said, quote, "We are being flexible in pivoting to high priority situations as they arise. We want to reassure parents and students that providing safe spaces to eat meals is a top priority," end quote. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
Former Trump officials have been subpoenaed by the Congressional Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection. With more on the story, it's Suzanne Potter with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic time. The January 6th House Committee has subpoenaed former Trump officials, including Steve Bannon, saying they possess important details related to the siege. There's a showdown over the debt ceiling, the amount the country is allowed to borrow, as Republicans want to force Democrats to raise it on their own to keep the government open past September 30th. It's been raised scores of times under both parties, and Democrats supported the last one under former President Trump, whose tax cuts are credited for a national debt increase of just over a third. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer did announce movement on the massive human infrastructure spending package they hope to pass this fall without Republican support if necessary.
The White House, the House, and the Senate have reached agreement on a framework that will pay for any final negotiated agreement. So the revenue side of this, we have an agreement.
In COVID news, the CDC's advisory committee joined the FDA's advisors, endorsing a third Pfizer shot for people 65 and older and for those 50 to 64 with underlying conditions. They differed in one respect, however. The CDC panel does not recommend a booster shot for people who work in high-risk settings like hospitals. They fear that third shots for too many could limit access for others. Public health groups are praising President Joe Biden's announcement that the U.S. will donate 500 million additional doses of COVID-19 vaccines to other countries. Kate Elder, policy advisor to Doctors Without Borders, says the need in low-income countries is dire.
There have been these wide discrepancies between wealthiest countries that have accumulated massive amounts of vaccines and then the poorest countries of the world that really have been begging for vaccines, were promised vaccines, and are still really in the lurch at the moment.
And consumer advocates testified before the Senate Special Committee on Aging about scams targeting the elderly during the COVID-19 pandemic. Odette Williamson is a staff attorney with the National Consumer Law Center.
This includes bogus treatment and cures for COVID-19, romance scams, government imposter scams, and fake charities. The list is endless.
A new one is based on a program that reimburses people up to $9,000 for COVID-related funeral expenses. It is a real benefit, but Veronica Verde from FEMA says if you're contacted out of the blue, hang up and call FEMA directly.
FEMA will not contact you until you call or apply for assistance. FEMA is not going to ask you to pay anything to get this benefit. So please do not give out any information about yourself or your loved ones, anyone who may contact you.
I'm Suzanne Potter for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to a special fall fund drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can become a member or renew your KBOO membership at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, produced by Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, your look behind the headlines. At 6, it's our Hispanic and Latinx Heritage Month series. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 59 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly sunny with a high of 84. Today in history, in 1896, American essayist F. Scott Fitzgerald was born. Fitzgerald received most of his acclaim for writing about the flamboyance of the jazz age after his death. He is best known for writing The Great Gatsby. The quote of the day is from Fitzgerald, who said, quote, "Vitality shows in not only the ability to persist, but the ability to start over. California Governor Gavin Newsom signed a $15 billion package of bills on Thursday designed to fight climate change and safeguard the state from destructive wildfires. Advocates of the effort are praising it, but also asking Newsom to declare a climate emergency. Suzanne Potter has more.
Climate activists are praising Governor Gavin Newsom for signing a $15 billion climate action package on Thursday, but they say he should go one step further and declare an official climate emergency in California. The bills will fund projects to build up wildfire resilience and combat the drought. But Heidi Harmon, former mayor of San Luis Obispo, says the state needs to think even bigger.
People in the state of California and everywhere will not do small things for small goals, but they will do big things for big goals. And California is a big vision state.
The package also includes money to plant more trees in cities to combat the heat island effect and improve air quality. It would also fund so-called smart agriculture projects and put more zero-emission vehicles on the road. While Newsom says the investment is the largest in state history, Los Angeles City Councilmember Paul Koretz thinks it doesn't go far enough given the immediate threats climate change poses in terms of drought, wildfires, and sea level rise.
We need to halt the permitting of oil and gas operations. We need to phase out the sale of fossil fuel-powered vehicles as soon as possible. Right away wouldn't be too soon.
Advocates are also calling on the state to allow more prescribed burns on Native American reservations in order to reduce the buildup of dead trees and brush that increases the fuel load and leads to megafires. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A U.S. Department of Energy research project at the University of Utah is developing geothermal energy technologies it says could someday provide sustainable, dependable power on a commercial scale. Mark Richardson has the story.
A researcher at the University of Utah says plans for generating renewable energy should include a power source right under our feet. Whether by plan or accident of geology, Utah has some of the highest potential in the nation for generating geothermal energy. Across the state, superheated geothermal water is already being used to make electricity, as well as for spas, space heating, agriculture, and aquaculture. Joseph Moore at the University of Utah's Geothermal Research Lab says if you can dig a deep enough hole, you can capture heat from the Earth's mantle to make sustainable, reliable power.
The goal is to be able to generate electricity or direct use anywhere in the world. Yeah, we can drill deep enough. The heat's there. It's just extracting that heat. We put the hot water after it's been used back in the ground, so it is renewable.
Moore is principal investigator at the Utah Frontier Observatory for research in geothermal energy, or Utah Forge. It's a Department of Energy-funded project tasked with developing the technologies and tools needed for enhanced geothermal reservoirs. Moore says Utah now has three geothermal power plants that generate a combined 72 megawatts of electricity, enough to supply about 72,000 homes. But he says once fully developed, geothermal has virtually limitless potential across the region.
Right now, we find the hottest temperatures at the shallowest depths in the west. So that's Utah, Nevada, California, a little bit to the north, Idaho, Oregon, a little bit to south, New Mexico, Wyoming.
He says natural geothermal resources aren't currently sufficient to reach the DOE's 2050 goal, but he predicts once the technology being developed in Utah matures, it could potentially generate enough power to run the entire country. Sarah Wright, director of the group Utah Clean Energy, agrees that geothermal power could become a major addition in the fight to counter climate change. She adds it doesn't cost much in terms of cents per kilowatt hour.
It is affordable. It's less than 10 cents and probably around 8. And it's a pollution-free, carbon-free resource that provides energy all day and all night.
I'm Mark Richardson for Utah News Connection.
The Oglala Sioux tribe is working on education requirements due to COVID-19, and the U.S. Justice Department picks 12 tribes for its crime data program. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Oglala Sioux Tribal Council voted to change the language of an educational ordinance that required students to take online classes on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Richard Tubols reports.
The Tribes Law and Order Committee is meeting soon to discuss new protocol to hold schools accountable to follow their plans for safe practices regarding the pandemic for in-person learning in accordance with the new amendment. The previous iteration of the ordinance required students to go back to online learning. OST President Kevin Killer says the action they took last week to enact the ordinance reflected the increasing COVID-19 cases reservation-wide.
Learning and interaction that younger generation needs, we want to make sure that, you know, that wasn't interrupted as well. And so basically they took the action to last week to do virtual learning.
Red Cloud Indian School students protested the shelter mandate, claiming that online learning would hurt their education and impact their future. With the number of cases rising in the last month, the tribe decided to enter the red risk level of their COVID-19 response plan.
End result was, it was amended to accommodate, to amend the shelter in place that required in-person learning. It turned it actually to each school, depending on each school safety plan, ensuring that they have the vaccinated students can come back and start doing.